Hello. In this audio snippet, we're going to continue talking about races, and we will eventually talk about what racism is and what it is not. So, and we also mentioned before that it's important to get these concepts clear, because as we write the new American Constitution, we have to have a better understanding of how humanity interacts so that the laws and the principles that we lay out in the new American Constitution are consistent with reality, with the metaphysical independent reality that's out there. And if we have a very minimal understanding of race and racism, then we are condemned to repeat the mistakes we have made before. So that's why it's important to talk about these things in the context of the formation of a new a system of government, a more perfect system of government. So we first mentioned before that we have to accept the reality that races exist. It's not just the human race per se, and people just being humans. We have to recognize that there are different races, there are different racial groups, and you cannot just be indifferent to that reality. And we began to talk about list the 12 racial groups, or the 12 tribes, you could say, that humanity can be divided into. And we mentioned that there are five basic tribes or racial groups in Asia, five tribes or racial groups in Europe, one that comes from Africa, even though Africa also has an overflow of people from Asia. And then there are the people from the Americas, the Amerindian, from the continent that is called the Americas. So those are the 12 racial groups, and the five in Asia are the Jews, the Arabs, the Persians, the Indians, and what we call the Chinese, or you could call the Orientals. And obviously that shows that when you say that someone is Asian, you shouldn't be thinking just of Chinese or Japanese or Korean people. Because Asia is comprised of actually five different groups, and to limit the word Asian to just people of Chinese or Japanese or Korean descent or Vietnamese descent or whatever is very myopic and shows ignorance about the reality of the world. And we mentioned that in Europe, the five racial groups are basically divided into Nordics, the Germanics, the Celts, the Latins, and the Slavs. And in Europe, sometimes it's difficult to discern who is who, because there has been a lot more intermingling in Europe, maybe, than in Asia, for example. So there are certain countries that have an influence of some of two or more of those racial groups. But if you look carefully, you can more or less see the patterns. Yes, there is such a thing as the Nordic group and the Germanic groups. And we mentioned before that the Nordics and the Germanics are almost like twins separated at birth. But even though they're very similar, they do differ in some fundamental aspects. When you look at them over time and over history. So there are the Nordics, the Germanics, the Celts, the Latins, and we mentioned the Latins are can be subdivided into four sub-tribes or subgroups, basically the Spaniards, the Portuguese, the Greeks, and the Italians. And the Greeks can and should be considered as part of that broader group. Usually the Greeks are seen as separate, but they are very genetically related to the Italians, and the Italians are also genetically related to the Spaniards and the Portuguese, so they're all part of the same racial group. And each of those subgroups has a calling, a purpose, functionality that they are designed to carry out, you could say. And it's important to understand those differences. And then you have the Slavs, which includes the Russians and a lot of people from Eastern Europe. But again, Eastern Europe has a mixture of different influences, mostly Germanic. Germanic and Slavic get combined a great deal within Eastern Europe, and there's even a part or a few parts of Eastern Europe, especially in the south, that are that also have a strong Latin influence, as in the case of Romania, for example, which is sort of a Latin plus Slavic nation. So those were the five groups, and then you have Black people in Africa and the Amerindians in the Americas. And now that we have kind of classified them, we will go back later to talk a little bit about each group in particular to understand their qualities, their defects, how they behave, because that is all very important to understand when analyzing human behavior. But before getting into that, let's talk in general terms. Obviously, if you look at each of those racial groups, you can see that they have genetic differences. So they are genetically different, and that's why they look different than people who are of a certain racial group tend to have certain features that other people from other groups do not have. So there are clearly genetic differences. And genetic differences then lead to different gifts or talents. And that then leads to something else we'll talk about. Like, for example, people of a certain race sometimes tend to be taller than people of other races. So that means that if you're born into a certain race, you might there might be a probability that you will be shorter than if you had been born into a different race. And that means that the people who are from the taller race will have, let's say, a tendency to gravitate towards sports where height is important, like, for example, basketball or volleyball. So you'll see these people gravitating from this race, gravitating towards that sport. And then people who are shorter might be gravitating towards a sport where height is not that important, as, for example, football, or what we call soccer in America, unfortunately. And it because in that sport, the ball is always on the ground, so you don't have to be tall to be kicking it. And sometimes being a little shorter, it makes a bit of a difference in terms of being more agile and more able to evade your opponent and so forth, even though obviously when you're going in for a header from a corner kick, it's pretty good if you're taller than your opponents. But you can play the game and be very successful at it if you're not relatively tall. Just look at Maradona and other famous players who are not really that tall. So you'll see that people of a certain racial group will tend to gravitate towards that sport more than people of other groups. And that means that the genetics create different talents, different abilities, and that will then lead to different tendencies. And that not only applies physically, but it applies in terms of cultural and sometimes even moral behavior. So, for example, if a person is taller than another person, physically taller, there's a natural tendency for that tallness to imbue that person with a greater sense of confidence or boldness or a sense of authority, because the person by default is standing taller than the people around him, And that gives him a sense of confidence and authority that maybe a person who is shorter might not naturally have. And that means that that taller person has a tendency to manifest a quality that we call the conqueror trait. So you see how a certain physical characteristic is conducive to a certain type of behavior. So that person will be more likely to embark on a business venture because they feel the confidence that they will succeed if they start a business. A person who has less confidence might not be as likely to start a business as that other taller person. So you see differences in behavior being manifested. And I would dare say that in many cases, it's not so much causation, but correlation, because both the tallness and the confidence are emanating from something else underneath. But talking about that kind of falls a little bit outside the scope of this of these audio snippets. But suffice it to say that even if sometimes there's causation and sometimes there's correlation, the tallness leads to confidence, and sometimes the confidence and the tallness are there at the same time because there's something else underneath that is producing both. And just as a side note, we have mentioned this before, and I think this is important to mention to understand races better and why certain races, certain people in certain races behave a certain way as opposed to people in other races. There are five fundamental personality traits, and I'm using the word personality for lack of a better term. It's a bit of a flat term that doesn't really render justice to what we're trying to describe, but for the purposes of these audio snippets, let's use the word personality. There are five basic personality traits that people are born with, and people tend to have combinations of those five traits. The first trait is what we can call the trait of judge. Some people are born judges, and they are always going around judging. That stems from them having this tendency to be very analytical. It's like they're born with this quest for analyzing things and finding what's right and what's wrong in what they're analyzing. It just comes as a factory setting. And if they don't control that judge trait, personality trait, they can get very judgmental in a very bad way. A lot of times that judgmental, quote-unquote, attitude is very beneficial. And societies that have people like that many times benefit because these people who are, quote, judgmental are the ones kind of ferreting out issues that other people are not seeing or willing to point out. But it's a trait that we can call judge. And these people are also very inventive in their nature, because they're always trying to get to the root of the issue. So they're always trying to find the underlying principle that is moving what they see on the outside. And because of that, they start discovering these general principles and inventing new things. And they start opening new territories and going into new dimensions of thinking because of their analytical, generic thinking. And for example, Isaac Newton was of that personality trait. People always say he discovered gravity, but obviously he didn't discover gravity. I think the first person who discovered gravity was the first human being who stumbled on a rock and fell to the ground, or the first guy who jumped off a cliff. Those were the first people who discovered gravity and its effects. Newton actually did was to discover that gravity operated under very fixed and predictable laws. That's what he discovered, and he was able to draft the famous equation saying that the gravity is this pull between masses that is proportional to both masses and inversely proportional to the square of the distance between the two masses, the famous F equals G M1 times M2 divided by R squared formula. So he observed things and was trying to find a general principle that was moving or that could explain the movements that he was seeing around him. And he discovered it. And he drafted this formula and said, this is a law that is being that is moving across the physical world. So these judge people invent new things. They discover laws and principles. They're very law-oriented, and they like to apply those laws. And they're able to discover these laws because they're always looking to find what is right. They're not just satisfied with what makes them feel good or what sounds okay or acceptable or gratifying. They want to know the truth. They want to get to what is right. They don't want to be wrong. And because they're obsessed with finding what's right, they end up discovering laws and principles and what because that's how they can find what is right and what is wrong. So, and it's important to mention this because there are certain races that genetically or somehow come with this factory setting that leads more towards judgment-oriented behavior. And that's why people of a certain race behave a certain way, because they have a greater proportion of judges than other races. So that is one trait. The second trait that we could mention is what we can call visionary. Certain people are born to kind of see into the future and be visionary and say, oh, we have this purpose and this calling and we are here to achieve this. And they are able to exhort other people to pursue this vision, this cause, this calling that they see in the distance. It's like they look towards the future and visualize something, and they're driven towards that vision. And these are people who are very prone to fight for causes. And because of their visionary nature, they tend to be very sacrificial in the sense that they're willing to lay down their lives figuratively and sometimes even literally for the sake of the vision or cause that that they perceive. It's as if they see something that other people cannot see. And I dare say that people who are of a visionary persuasion sometimes tend to have an untimely or early death. And that's why, in part, you hear the sad stories of people who are in the artistic fields, you know, music and arts and so forth, that end up dying very young. Artists, musicians, or, you know, at least the good ones, they tend to be of that visionary persuasion. They are driven by this passion, this cause, and because of that, their lives sometimes seem to go like a torrent, like a river flowing towards an end, and sometimes they unfortunately end up dying young. So that's another type of personality trait, and there are certain races of people that tend to have a lot of that, like a greater proportion of visionaries than people of other races. Just to give you a sense of what a visionary is about, think of a kamikaze Japanese pilot, bomber. The kamikaze soldiers would... they wanted to give their lives for a cause, and to them, their life was not they didn't care for their life because they valued the cause to be higher than their natural life. And that's why they would, you know, fly their plane and look down and see an enemy ship and say, okay, for the sake of the cause, I am going to dive down and destroy the ship, and even if it means taking my own life. That is the what a visionary does. There's a certain sacrificial nature to him or her. And this sort of person is moved by passions, by emotions, in ways that other people are not. And that's also why they get so much involved in music and the arts, because they have this emotional passion and emotional flow, a river that flows through them that other people just don't have as naturally as they do. And that's why I would dare say, this is going to sound a little bit strange, but I do believe it, with time, years from now, when someone hears these audio snippets, they're going to say, yeah, that has been confirmed to be true. And it's that people who tend to physically be faster are generally of the visionary persuasion. In other words, if you see people of a certain race who are physically, apparently physically faster than people of other races, then there is a strong likelihood that you will see a greater number of visionaries in that racial group. It's like there's a correlation between being a visionary and between physical fastness. Because a prophet sees a cause and drives towards it with fervor and passion. It's like they can explode and drive themselves into a cause, and that even manifests itself physically. And that's why races where you have people who are fast sprinters, who have this ability to have these bursts of speed, in these racial groups where that predominates, you will also see a strong percentage of visionary people. And there's another example of where a physical trait and a certain type of behavior seem to coexist, the fastness and the visionary trait. And then a third human quality, or basic human personality trait, if you can call it that, is the one we mentioned a moment ago of being a conqueror. There are certain people who are born with a boldness and a confidence that they can conquer the world. And you will find these people usually doing things like starting businesses, and they get a lot involved in sales. Basically, everyone that you find that is that loves being a salesman, enjoys it to the hilt, that type of person is usually born with this conqueror gene, if you can call it that. They have this belief that they can convince anyone to do anything, and that's something very common in the conqueror. The conqueror is a convincer. It's like if you want to find a person who can go and convince a whole bunch of other people to have faith in something in particular, to believe in something in particular, hire a conqueror. He will go and conquer the hearts of people and get them to believe in what what you want them to believe. He's very good. He or she is very good at convincing people and conquering their hearts, so that they will accept a certain value system or certain ideas. And they can also be, these conquerors can be very authoritative. So when you find a person who just exudes authority, you are in the presence of a conqueror. So that's the third personality trait. The fourth personality trait is what we can call the server. And a server is a person who has this knack for pleasing people. He or she wants to serve. He or she wants to, you know, come up to you like a waiter at a restaurant now and ask you, what would you like? Okay, do you like onions with that or no onions? And that sort of person likes to get it right because he or she wants to do something of service to the other person that is pleasing to that other person. And you will generally find a lot of these people in the service-oriented industries, you know, like restaurants and in the food industry and also in hospitals and so forth. That's the service spirit. Now, the problem with the service spirit is that it usually tends to degenerate into an emotionalism where everything is about emotions and pleasing each other. So it's like you don't want to hurt another person's feelings, and everything is about feelings because they have this predisposition for caring about the feelings of others. That's why they like to serve and please the other person and have the other person feel good. But that can degenerate into a focus on emotionalism and feelings. And those people tend to clash with the judges. Those who have the judge personality, they tend to clash a whole bunch because the judge is after the truth. He doesn't care about the emotions. And the servers care if he's degenerating, he becomes focused on emotionalism. Doesn't matter to him whether it's true or not. What matters to him is, does it hurt people's feelings or not? Does it make them feel good or not feel good? While the judge is just saying, no, well, let's apply the laws here, the truth, yes and no. And sometimes the judge, if he degenerates, he becomes legalistic and starts applying laws that don't need to be applied and being excessively petty about things that he doesn't need to be petty. And then the server steps in to more or less counteract that excessive judgmental behavior. In my personal life, I have observed and seen that it's generally more the other case that manifests itself, where the server degenerates into excessive emotionalism, and the judge is then at odds with the server because the judge wants to bring the truth back, and the server wants emotionalism to prevail. And as you can see, people in the political liberal tendencies, they are of that server, distorted server variety. They become obsessed with feeling and emotion, and the truth is secondary to them. And also, that server attitude is sometimes predominant in certain racial groups. And I can say, for example, that the Latins... Please remember, when I say Latin, I'm not saying Latin American. I'm saying Latins of Europe, which include the Spaniards, the Portuguese, the Greeks, and the Italians. The Latins tend to have a strong server personality trait. It doesn't mean that every Latin person is a server. What we're saying here is that Latins... tend to have a higher proportion of servers than other people, than other racial groups, and that's why a lot of the Latins get so involved in the food industry, like the Italians, you know, with Italian food, and the Spaniards with the paella and all that stuff, and the Greeks with their Greek food and so forth. And it all stems from that, and they are more passionate, emotional. And one thing that servers have is that they like a lot of physical contact with people. If you find someone that is a very hugging person, hug, 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 everything is hug, 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 hugging all the time and touching you and all that, you're dealing with a server. That's why Italians are, you know, like to hug each other, and that's why people of the Latin persuasion like to kiss each other on the cheek and things like that, whereas people of other racial groups find that a little bit uncomfortable. But it's because they tend to have less of the server personality trait than Latins do. Latin is about, the server trait is about communion, interaction, and enjoying each other's company, and all that social stuff. So you can see that the server personality is very strong in races such as the Latin people. It's important to point out all these things because as you become aware of these different traits, then you can understand why certain people behave a certain way. And then you can also understand why they start acting incorrectly in certain ways, because each of these traits can degenerate into something negative. Obviously, the judge, if he degenerates, becomes a legalistic sadomasochistic judge, if you can call it that, a legalistic person that doesn't care, that to him the law is more important than the person. The little details, the minute insignificant details become very important to him, and that he starts giving those things an importance that they do not have in reality, in the real truth. So that's how the judge personality degenerates. The visionary personality degenerates into a terrorist. Like the people who did the 9/11 attack, they were visionaries. But they degenerated. The problem with the visionaries is that they're driven by this strong surge of emotions towards a cause. And sometimes, because their life is seeking a cause, sometimes they are offered a cause that is false. And they fall for it because they have this passion for surging their emotions towards a certain cause. And sometimes they're offered a cause that is false, a deception, a deceitful cause, and they fall for it. And then they sacrifice their lives for this false cause. So a visionary can turn into a terrorist, a person who is just like a radical, just going after, even putting his life on the line. And in the process, destroying other people's lives, fighting for these causes that are actually false causes. So the visionary degenerates into a terrorist. The conqueror can degenerate into what we can call, let's say, a dictator, a person who uses and a user. A conqueror, you know, knows that he can conquer people. And usually another quality, it's not necessarily always the case, but there's a certain general tendency that people of the conqueror persuasion tend to be physically attractive. Doesn't mean that they always have to be, but there is a higher percentage of physical attractiveness for some reason in the conqueror trait than in other other traits. And because of their because they can persuade people, they can conquer people's hearts. Sometimes they use that to their own personal advantage, and they become dictators and users of people. They like to use people and take advantage of them, use them while they can benefit from them, and then they just drop them and go find another person to use. So that's how that degenerates. And then the server, as we mentioned before, becomes this person who's just about emotionalism, who becomes detached and actually hates the truth, hates the judge who's coming to make judgments, because judgments make people feel bad. And we're all about touchy-feely and emotionalism. And so the server degenerates into this kind of low level, kind of like a dog, just pursuing low passions, low emotions. And that's why a server, is when he or she degenerates, also tends to fall into addictions, drug addictions and alcohol addictions and things like that. So that's how that degenerates. So if you find people who are a racial group that has a predominance of servers, and why do they have a predominance of servers? Because there's something in the genetics that is conducive to that. And there's also the other thing we'll be talking about, other than genetics, there's also the environmental factors and also timeline factors. Those are the two other things we're going to talk about. But the thing is that, so if you see a racial group that has a higher percentage of servers, then you'll also see a higher tendency towards drug addiction and towards certain decays that you will not see in other racial groups, because they have that server profile. And then the fifth and final kind of inborn or native trait that we can have is what we can call the organizer trait. There are certain people who are born with this ability or just natural tendency to classify things and organize them. They like to have everything in order. They are very procedural in their nature. They like to establish procedures, step one, step two, step three. They are the ones who love to create forms for people to fill out. A lot of these organizers end up being accountants, librarians, people of that nature. And because they like to organize and put things into pockets or baskets or groups or categories, they tend to be very kind of emotionally contained. So they are almost like the opposite of the visionary. The visionary is out there just surging emotionally for causes and ideas and principles. And this other person is more restrained emotionally, containing his emotions, his or her emotions. And sometimes the visionary and the organizer can clash, because the organizer is trying to keep everything organized and in its place, and the visionary is just surging like a river all over the place. And so those personalities can clash and they can conflict with each other. And sometimes the organizer becomes so organized that he organizes everybody around him to death, and creates stifling procedures that smother people and prevent people just flowing with freedom, because everything has to be within a certain order, in a certain order, following a certain protocol, etc., etc. And the visionary is more improv. The visionary doesn't like to be held down by a schedule, by a tight list of guidelines. The visionary is more free-flowing. He improvises, and the organizer hates that. And so there's a lot of clash between those two. And obviously, when the visionary turns into a terrorist, then the organizer finds that repulsive, and in that case, the organizer is the one who is in the right. He is basically the one who is best at reining in the visionary gone bad. And by the same token, the visionary is the best at fighting against the organizers who are trying to contain everything and preventing the river flowing freely. So those are the five types of human personality traits, and you can see them in the human races, in the racial groups. And when you look at those five traits and try to analyze or understand the racial, the different races from the prism of those five traits, then you can start understanding why white people behave a certain way, why black people behave a certain way, why Orientals behave a certain way, because they are acting in the context of the traits that they are genetically more predisposed to be born with than other races. And then you can see why they do these bad things or why they do these good things, because the trait you're born with is like a gift. You're given the gift, and then it's up to you to decide what to do with it. So you can use it well, you can not use it well, and depending on how you use it, then there will be certain consequences, good or bad. And then it starts to spread out that, like, if one starts using it the right way, then it's like it spreads to other people in that same racial group, and then more people will use it the right way. But if it starts getting used the wrong way, then it spreads like a cancer throughout the rest of the racial group. So it's kind of this ebb and flow. But it's important to see those five personality traits and see how they play out in each racial group. And I think we have mentioned in the past that there's also two other traits, but the other traits are not basically native or innate traits. You're not born with them. It's traits that you decide to adopt. It's what I would call the wild card personality traits. One is a dreamer. Certain people are dreamers. It's the sort of people who dream of great things even in the midst of small circumstances. So they can be born in a small village and they dream of the big city, you know, and making it big and becoming successful. And so even though they're living in a limited environment, they dream of great things. And that's something you choose to do. It's like, in a sense, it's as if you're offered the option at some point in your life and you go, yes, I'll take it, or no, thank you, that's not for me. So it's something you choose to do or not do. And then the other trait is what I call the prosperer. In other words, there's a certain personality trait that promotes prosperity to everyone, in his own life and to everyone around him or her. I have encountered certain people that when I relate to them, I get a sense of prosperity. It's like they emanate prosperity. Like everything they do seems to work, seems to prosper. They also bring a sense of peace. It's like peace and prosperity. And they have, it's something that's in them and emanates from them. And it's very important to have people like that in your business. If you start a business, it's very good to have a peace and prosperer, peace and prosperity type person around, because that person will just emanate that. There's a certain, it's like everybody can be all troubled, and that person shows up, and then it's like there's a sense of peace. Everything's going to be okay type of thing. And everything seems to work out and things prosper. And it's an attitude that comes almost just like with a dreamer. Like one day it comes knocking at your door and it offers you, do you want to be like this? And if you choose to be like that, yes, you say, yes, I'll take the offer, I will be like that, then you start becoming like a dreamer and a prosperer. But if you say, no, thank you, that's not for me, then it will go away and find somebody else. But those are more optional. They're not, they are almost directly by choice, and they're not something you're gifted with from your internal factory settings, you know, when you're born. And now that we've said that, it's important, let's just quickly go back and talk about the 12 racial groups. And we said, for example, that in Asia, there are five groups, five tribes of humans, the Jews, the Arabs, the Persians, the Indians, and the Chinese. And we can more or less, even though this is a very simplistic mapping, you could say, you could say that within the context of them, in other words, relative to each other, in those five groups, you can see that one of them is more or less the judge of the group, or more prone to be judge. Another one is more prone to be visionary. Another one is more prone to be a conqueror. Another one is more prone to be a server. And another one is more prone to be an organizer. Out of those five in Asia, the one that's most directly related to the conqueror, and I say that in the context of them, you know, within them, within the five, the one that's more related to the conquering nature is the Jewish racial group. And you can see it that in the sense that they have been probably the most successful at conquering the world than all the other groups, in the sense that they have influenced the culture of the entire world in a way that the other groups cannot really honestly say that they have. Like even, for example, here in America, Jews have, in a sense, kind of permeated the entertainment industry. For example, I remember hearing a Jewish comedian, stand-up comedian, joking about you know, Jews being everywhere, and he was saying that if you see the credits at the end of a movie or a TV show or Law and Order or whatever is. He said, it's Jew, 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 Jew. You know, it's just one Jew after another, to the point that it's like embarrassing even to a Jew to see so many Jewish names just roll at the end of all these shows. And it's because they have this conquering nature about them. They are able to take over entire industries and influence cultures in ways that the other groups cannot say they have. Like even, for example, when you ask someone, what year is it? The year is 2022, at least at the time of this recording. And why 2022? Because it's 2022 after the birth of Christ, of Jesus Christ, who was a Jew. Technically they say he was born around 4 years before Christ, which is kind of ironic. But the number is more or less an approximation of the time from his birth, the birth of a Jew. So human history has been divided into two by a Jew. I mean, that's how conquering or influential that racial group has been. And you can't say that about the Arabs or the Persians or the Indians or even the Chinese, even though the Chinese have become very successful at producing a lot of cheap products and things like that, and maybe there's a lot of Chinese restaurants all over the world, but you can't honestly say that the Chinese or the Orientals have been able to influence the rest of the world or conquer the world or gain the hearts of the rest of the world the way the Jews have. So they are the conquerors of Asia. And also you can see it even, for example, when Israel was born again in 1948, and all the Arabs, the 50 million or however many there were, decided to drive Israel into the sea. They were having none of that, of Jews in their land, which they thought was theirs. And the Jews, who were just a few million, I forget how many there were in 48, you know, or in the beginning of the nation of Israel, and they fought back, and they were able to shamefully beat out all the Arabs in 48. I forget when the wars happened, I think there was one in 48, I could be wrong, or 49 at the beginning, and then the famous one in 67, and the one in 73, and they just kick butt. And that's what a conqueror does. The conqueror can just go ahead and steamroll the opposition. And even though they were heavily outnumbered, they were able to kick butt, and that's why we still have the nation of Israel. So there's a conquering nature about them. And then the Arabs more or less manifest the visionary. They are kind of the more visionary of the five in Asia. And you can see that how that has manifested sometimes, unfortunately, in a negative way, that terrorism has come predominantly from Arabs, and that's because they are visionary. So the problem is they have a visionary quality about them. It's just been taken many times and used in a misguided way. But even in that negative trait, you can see a positive quality that hopefully will someday be redirected in the right way. But you have to recognize it, and you have to call it out, because if you don't call it out, then you can't help them to correct it. If you're seeing a visionary who is going terrorist, you have to call him out and say, hey, you're acting like a terrorist, and you have this, and this is wrong in you. Because if you don't point that out, then you are preventing that person fulfilling his calling as a true visionary. And that's something liberals don't understand. The liberal says, oh, you don't say anything bad about Arabs because that's racial profiling and that's evil. No, by doing that, what they're doing is they are, first of all, not even understanding why Arabs behave the way they do. And number two, they are preventing the Arab people fulfilling their destiny and their calling as visionaries, because you're basically allowing them to destroy or misuse their calling. And then the Persians would be the organizers of the five. They are the more restrained of the five. They are more orderly. And that's why there's a strong connection with the Persians and priesthood. That's why they are currently in Iran ruled by a religious head of state, in a sense, or religious a hierarchy or group that rules. They are very priestly, very orderly, very structured. Out of the five, they are the organizers of Asia. And the Indians would be more the servers. And that's why, in a negative sense, they fall into low passions and all these weird things that they get into, you know, the worship of snakes and rats and all these crazy low-level things, because when the server degrades, he degrades into those sorts of things. And then the Chinese or the Orientals are the more or less the judges of Asia. As we said, a judge tend to be of the inventor persuasion, because they see principles, they discover new things, new ideas, and that's why so many inventions have early on in human history came from China. You know, I think paper was invented in China, gunpowder was invented in China. And so many other things that I can't remember right now, but it's kind of surprising when you hear, oh, this was, you know, done first in China, or this was invented in China, or the Europeans took this from China when they, you know, because of the Silk Road and things like that. So the Chinese are, and the Oriental people are very inventive, analytical and judge oriented, and that's why the Japanese, for example, are so good at electronics and things like that that require a lot of thinking and inventiveness and things like that. So they are the judges of Asia. That doesn't mean that there's not a lot of, for example, server infiltration within China. There's a lot of it, But I'm saying relative to each other, it's like that's how they fit in. But that doesn't mean they're exclusively conquerors or exclusively visionaries or exclusively organizers and so forth. They have a lot of other things. For example, the Chinese have a lot of contamination of other things. They're not just judges, because obviously, for example, you see the Chinese are very famous for their copyright infringements. That is very anti-judge nature, because a judge tries to do what's right. And that's very server, mostly a server, when he degrades, does not care about what's right and wrong. So they tend to be more likely to violate rules like that. So you can see that the fact that they are the judges of Asia doesn't mean that they always behave like judges, but relative to the others, they are. And the same happens in Europe. But I think this video is running a bit long. I hope that, and we'll continue with the description of what Europe is about in terms of those five in the next audio snippet. But just so you know, I know it's not a coincidence that we are, as humans, have five fingers in each of our hands. The five fingers are representative of our five traits. And if you want to remember them, you could say that the judge is the thumb. And that's why, to me, it's not a coincidence that when you want to give your approval of something, you use your thumb. Thumbs up, or if you don't like it, thumbs down. It's like a judgment, and it's with the thumb. And then the visionary goes with the index finger, you know, and it's not a coincidence again that the visionary points people to a vision or cause in the horizon. So that means that requires pointing your index finger towards the horizon. And that's what the index finger is for. It's for the visionary to point to the cause that he's calling and exhorting others to go towards, and calling himself to go towards. And then the middle finger is the conqueror finger, and that's why it's the big, largest one that helps you to grab more things. Imagine how if you didn't have your middle finger and you try to grab, let's say, a lot of balls in some bag. You reach into the bag and try to grab a lot of balls, like little balls, they would slip out of your hand. The middle finger is the largest of the fingers. It's the most expansive, reaching out to grab things. So that's what that middle finger is about. And it's for other things that people use it for. But in the context of this, it's related to the conqueror nature. And the ring finger, as they call it, I believe, is more the server. And again, it's not a coincidence. That's the finger that people put their wedding rings on. A wedding is a relationship where you are there to please the other person. It's a relationship of communion and pleasing the other person. Again, it's not a coincidence that's where the wedding finger goes. The ring finger, that's the finger related to the server attitude or the service attitude or personality trait. And then the little pinky finger, it goes with the organizer. The organizer also has this thing that they tend to be the weakest of the bunch. A lot of the organizers go into careers that seem to have very little future because they're the opposite of the visionary. They want something safe and contained, and they're very happy, you know, being accountants. And not there's anything wrong with being an accountant. What I mean is that it's different from the visionary who's just going out and saving whales and doing all these crazy things. And the organizer is more down to earth, and they get into jobs like teachers. Organizers, if you look at a teacher's union, and let's say it's not tainted by Democrat rubbish, you will see a lot of organizers, people of the organizer persuasion. And so they get into these jobs that are low paying and not glamorous. They're the weakest of the bunch. And that's why the pinky finger is the weakest of all the fingers. It's the daintiest of all the fingers, and the most vulnerable one. But it's the one that completes the hand. And organizers are also very perfectionist, and they like things to be complete. They like completeness, wholeness, nothing missing. That's what they like. And that's also why they tend to become hoarders. They like to accumulate and organize and things like that, and they like completeness. And that's why they start accumulating things sometimes. And when they go overboard, they become hoarders. Like I was seeing this episode, some show called American Pickers, and there was this person that they were trying to buy stuff from. He was a hoarder. He had a lot of collections and things, and he wouldn't sell anything. And he kept saying, "I'm a completist," which is kind of an interesting way of him explaining his, and he knew he had a problem, but he kept rationalizing it. And he kept saying, "Oh, I'm a completist. So I can't sell this until I have the entire collection." And we all know he will never have the entire collection. He will die without having the entire collection. But it was interesting when he said completist. And I said to myself, he's an organizer. He's a person who likes completion and perfection. And organizers are very perfectionist. So they're very dainty about that, like very finicky about that. And that kind of goes with the pinky finger. And they like everything to be complete and perfect. So those are the five fingers, it's important to understand those five fingers of the human personality, so that when you look at racial behavior, you'll understand why people behave a certain way and why they degrade in certain cases and start acting in a certain way. And it's important, as you start saying all these things, you start admitting, hey, races have good things and bad things. Racial groups, you can say black people have this problem, or white people have this problem, or Hispanic people have this problem, or whatever, because or this good thing. Well, in the case of a Hispanic, you can't really say a good thing most of the time. And I say that from experience. For example, with black people, you can say, oh, they have this good quality, this very special quality. But then you should also be able to say that they have this very bad quality, and you need to point it out. First of all, because it's the truth, and second, because it's the only way to liberate them and set them free so that they can fulfill their calling. You can't help someone if you don't point out the problem first. And you have to, it's just the reality. There are certain tendencies, and that's what we're trying to get at with these snippets about race and racism. So we'll continue, and then we'll talk about culture, hopefully in the next audio snippet, and then try to finalize this this topic and continue with another topic related directly or indirectly to the formation of this new American Constitution and a more perfect form of government. Thank you very much for listening.